shoulder, dropping to her knees, tipping him off balance as she went down. His own anger worked against him as he tumbled over her body and onto his back, slamming down hard again. "Besides, war isn't fair." Shahzad turned away, leaving him coughing in the dust. "But if you want to see a bit more of an even fight..." She glanced around the circle, eyes finally landing on Jin. She summoned him forward with a nod. He stepped into the makeshift arena with her, pulling off his shirt as he went. Across from me, among the line of new recruits, I saw one of the few girls who'd stood up to fight for Ahmed dash her eyes down to her feet, embarrassed, before looking back up quickly, eyebrows traveling up her forehead. Jin looked impressive enough with his shirt on, but without it, he was a wall of bare, lean muscles and tattoos against Shahzad's smaller frame. He rolled his shoulders, making his compass tattoos shift across his skin. I stuck my fingers in my mouth, letting out a high whistle. Jin laughed, casting me a wink over his shoulder. I couldn't remember the last time things had been so easy between all of us. The last time we'd been together like this. Not fighting for our lives, just living.
"If they kill each other..."
Sam slid into the space Jin had left next to me.
"Does it mean you and I can finally stop these games and be together?"
Neither Shahzad nor Jin moved straight away, both eyeing each other at a safe distance. I'd seen them fight separately, but never one another. They'd trained Ahmed together, I remembered, back before the Soul Team trials, when he'd faced Kadir. They knew each other's fighting styles. Neither one of them was going to strike in haste. Shahzad moved first, a straight lunge through Jin's defenses. He slammed an arm hard into hers, forearm deflecting as he aimed a blow for her side, even as she twisted away from him. Breaking apart before they clashed together again, before even catching her breath, Shahzad aimed for Jin's jaw while he ducked out of the way, gaining a brief advantage as he dodged to her left before she dropped and rolled away from the blow that came her way. They fought like a blur. She was quicker, he was stronger. In the end, it happened so fast I almost missed it. Shahzad snaked behind Jin, ducking under an arm as he swung, his knife suddenly out at his throat, plucked from his belt without him ever noticing it was going. Without thinking, my hand danced to Zahir's knife at my own side, the levity suddenly leaving me. But Jin laughed as Shahzad released him, tossing his blade back to him.
"Anyone else?"
Shahzad asked, spreading her arms wide. Nobody stepped forward. Whatever else it might take to train our new recruits, I didn't think Shahzad would have to worry about them following her lead.
"Blue-eyed bandit,"
Samir called, eyes sparkling in the way of someone who didn't really understand that fighting meant blood, meant death, not adventure.
"Are you going to fight her?"
"Now that wouldn't be a fair fight," Shahzad said.
"No," I agreed, and when Shahzad turned around, she was staring down the barrel of my gun. I winked at my friend. "It wouldn't." Shahzad pulled something out of her pocket. An orange harvested that morning from the chest buried in the mountain. She tossed it up in the air, a high arc. I tracked the thing with the barrel of my gun all the way to its highest point, and right before it began its descent, I fired. The orange fell to the ground, a mess of pulp and shredded rind.
"Now," Shahzad said, turning back around to the recruits. "Let's start again. Who thinks that they can shoot like Amani?" "Will they be ready by the time we reach Isman?"
Ahmed asked that evening. Shahzad had run everyone ragged before she finally released them to go to the prayers that Tamid was leading at sunset. Tamid stood where, just a few days past, I'd seen my brother bless the gathered men and women. He led them in prayer for Noorsham's soul. Long may it defend us. And for the safety of those who had stood up to fight with Ahmed. It was strange watching him. He seemed at home, like standing in front of our people, our families, was where he had always been destined to be. I'd thought we were both too crooked to fit in this place, but he belonged here in a way I never had, or never wanted to. I belonged with the rebellion. Instead of going to prayers, the rebellion gathered in a small tent propped up against one of the few remaining walls of what used to be Sazi. The last of the daylight filtered red through the tent, casting a flame-like glow across our faces. With all of us here, it was like a faraway echo of something familiar, of our old camp and all the times we'd gathered like this to make a plan. Except now, everyone looked like shadows of themselves. Ahmed, Shahzad, and Delilah were worn ragged, smudged with pain and exhaustion, and something else, too. The first-hand knowledge of the suffering the Sultan was putting this country through. Of what one man could do to all of us from on high. Of what it would mean for those who lived if we lost this war. Those we left behind under the rule of a man who had sent hordes of people to Aramot. We were like a faded picture in a book that had lost a lot of its gilt.
"Do you think we should take the new recruits with us?"
Ahmed asked. "I don't think we can afford to turn away any extra able bodies," Shahzad said.
"Even if they're extra bodies to feed and supply?"
I could hear the question Ahmed was really asking. Even if we might just be leading them to their deaths. Our general cast a fleeting glance my way before she carried on quickly. "Assuming we can shut that machine down, then this is a fight that's going to be won on numbers." "Hell, we might need them before we get into Ilyaz, what with the new foreign friends Bilal has been making." It slipped out irritably, though I hadn't meant it to. Rahim and Ahmed both looked at me blankly. They hadn't been gone all that long, but a whole lot of Miraji had changed in that time. I'd been leading this rebellion, and now I had to give that power back to Ahmed. I thought it would be a relief. I guess I'd gotten a little used to the weight while he'd been gone. "Things have changed while you've been in Aramot. And you know, it might not kill you from time to time to talk to someone who knows about this desert." The words were coming out in a torrent now, my accent getting thicker as I went. "For one, I reckon I could have told you how the people here would react to us returning without Noorsham. We might have spared Delilah needing to save all our necks. And another thing I can tell you is that Ilyaz is crawling with Albish. They're looking to make an alliance with the Galen and move on Ismon together. And the way I see it, if two of our enemies turn on us at once, we're done for. Whether we can take that throne or not, we won't hold it." Ahmed listened to me, pressing a knuckle against a spot at his hairline as I told them what they had missed. That to get to Ismon, we would have to get through Layla's inventions and our foreign enemies. That Ilyaz was occupied. I pointed at Rahim. "Your Lord Bilal is helping, too, giving them passage through the mountains. And if we don't get this right, we're going to find ourselves facing more enemies than we can handle before we even see the city."
"My men are following orders," Rahim said defensively. "They're not traitors to their country." "We're all traitors to our country," Jin pointed out. He was sitting with one knee propped up, his arms slung lazily over it, but his focus wasn't to be mistaken. He didn't trust Rahim. Not even if Ahmed and Delilah were treating him as their brother. Not even if he was Jin's brother, too.
"We need them to be traitors for us,"
What happens if they're not as loyal to you as you think they are?
Why don't we worry about that when we get there? I interjected, breaking up this fight before it could start. How the hell are we going to get there?
We use one of our new friends from Aramot, Chazad said, without missing a beat. Haitham al-Fawzi. He was the emir of Chamat before he started sheltering rebel sympathizers and wound up jailed for it. His brother is ruling in Chamat now, but the city belongs to him rightfully. I reckon we can take it back.
And it's a seaport,
Jin completed, understanding.
You want to sail to Ilyaz from Chamat.
It will be easier than traveling north on foot,
Ahmed said, trying to make peace.
We can dock in Gasab and get to Ilyaz from there.
I'm not so sure I want to go back to Ilyaz,
Sam interjected, making sure Shazad heard what he was saying. And how could she not? We were all cramped so close together in here that our knees were touching.
What with how I almost died there?
He puffed out his chest a little.
Half the people here have almost died in Ilyaz,
Rahim informed him tersely.
Amani only almost died because you shot her,
Jin interjected, making Sam snort under his breath. I glanced around the circle, catching Shazad's eye roll as I did, but she wasn't who I'd been looking for. I realized that without meaning to, I'd been seeking out Hala, expecting her to interject with something that would cut the bickering boys down to size.
The only people who aren't coming to Ilyaz are people who are behaving like children,
Shazad snapped.
Because I don't train children in my armies.
A quick silence fell over the tent as Shazad took control.
Now here's what we're going to do.
Chapter 29. The city of Chamat never stood a chance. It took us almost 2 weeks of walking to get to the sea. It would have taken half that time if we hadn't stopped quite so often. When the rebellion was somewhere near recovered from Aramot, we finally made ready to move. We packed as much as we could carry, as much as Sazi could spare, splitting it between the twins and the people who were on foot. Finally, we were as ready to leave as we were ever going to be. But not all of us were leaving. Tami decided to stay behind. I'd known he wouldn't be coming with us, but it was unsettling to walk away without him all the same. "You could still come back with us, you know," I said on the morning we prepared to leave. "We could use someone to patch us up on the road." He was good at what he did. I'd watched him bandage Rahim's bloody nose a few days past, when Jin had hit him in the face as they were demonstrating something to our new recruits. 10 days in Sazi, and those two weren't getting along any better.
I belong here, Amani.
Tamid leaned heavily on his false leg on the unsteady ground of the mountain face.
I always have.
I could tell his mind was elsewhere.
You don't have to do this, you know,
he said finally.
Go back there and
die. He couldn't bring himself to say the word.
If you stayed,
I have to go, Tamid. I cut him off. I belong with them. I offered him a wan smile to take the sting out of the words. I always have. He nodded. And I knew he understood without really understanding, the same way I understood he had to stay here, even if I'd never really understood why he wanted to. So we just stood in silence on the mountain, waiting until the moment our paths would take us far apart, probably forever.
It was early morning, and it was colder up here. A small shiver went through me. To my surprise, Tamid reached out and put his arms around me awkwardly. My one-time friend. If I was going to die in Isman, it was nice to know that we'd forgiven each other at least. We all said our goodbyes, some eyes filled with tears as families bid farewell to the men and women who had joined us. There were about 36 of them in the end, adding to the 100 or so we'd rescued from the mines. A few of the people who had come out of Aramot had decided not to go any farther with the rebellion. They were too broken by the prison to fight any more fights.
Amani?
Aunt Farah stopped me as we turned to head down the mountain. I tensed. Whatever she had to say to me, she'd waited until the absolute last minute, which couldn't mean anything good. Shahzad noticed and stopped next to me, like she was standing guard at my back. I was grateful for her. But Aunt Farah's face wasn't full of venom this time.
Shira!
I heard the pain it took her to say her dead daughter's name.
She had a son?
She did. I nervously adjusted the strap on the pack of supplies I was carrying. Aunt Farah was more family to Fadi than the rebellion was. She was his grandmother. She had more right to raise him than we did. But he was a Demji, too. I couldn't just hand him over to be raised here like I had been, ignorant of what I was. Like Norsham had been, a bomb of sheer power waiting to explode. If she asked me for her only daughter's child, and I had to refuse her, well, then I might just be leaving her on even worse terms than I did last time. But still, I couldn't stop myself from adding, "She named him Fadi, after her... our grandfather. Your father."
"If you..."
Aunt Farah started. And then she bit off her own words, like she was struggling to get them out.
"I'd like to meet my grandson someday, Amani. If that's possible."
I waited, but there was no threat, no demand, no belittling of me to get what she wanted. I hesitated before replying.
"I don't know
if I trust you with him.
I don't know how things are going to turn out here. We're at war.
Chances are I'm not going to be alive to bring him to meet you." Aunt Farah nodded stiffly.
"I know. But will you try?"
That I could give her. That was a promise I could keep.
"I'll try."
I turned away quickly before I could see the hope spark on my aunt's face, when I knew trying might not be good enough. We headed down from the mountain and toward the railway tunnel that cut from western Miraji into the east, through the middle mountains. Haitham al-Fawzi was anxious to reclaim his city. All of us were anxious to finish this war. On the way, we passed through both Juniper City and Masil, the place where Jin and I had joined a caravan, back when I was barely the blue-eyed bandit, and he was just a foreigner. Not a Demji and a prince. I hadn't known then that the genie they told the story of here, who'd flooded the sea with sand, was my father. There, standing in the same pit in the middle of town, where Jin had once fought to prove his prowess to the camel's knees, Delilah told the story of Prince Ahmed again, like she had in Sazi, images that matched her words spilling from her fingers. By the time she finished, we had another 6 recruits. Most of them were young men and women who belonged to the crumbling city, but a few split off from their caravans to fall into step with us. Leaving their traveling clan wouldn't be looked on well, but they were taking a chance and handing their lives over. A day after Masil,
we crossed through the railway tunnel that led from the desert into eastern Miraji. We started at dawn, moving as quickly as we could. We all knew that it wasn't a good idea to wind up under the mountain in the dark. And we made it to the other side before night. Barely. The sun was setting as we stepped out. It had been months since we'd lost the rebel camp in the attack, but for a moment as we emerged on the other side of the mountain, I thought I wasn't stepping out of a tunnel but through a secret door. Instead of desert sands, the valley that stretched out below us was emerald with rolling fields of grass. This was another Miraji, 1,000 miles away from the one I'd grown up in, it seemed. Trees hanging with the last of the summer fruits dotted the landscape between field after field, and the air smelled of rain. Abruptly, the twins were off, bursting into the shapes of two hawks and plunging down the valley, racing, their loud screeches filling the air. Southeastern Miraji was dotted with farming villages, and we stopped in every single one we passed. In each village, Delilah told Ahmed's story, and in each one, new people joined us, packing up their supplies to fall in line behind the hero of Miraji. The rebel prince brought back to life. Before we'd made it far, the story had spread ahead of us, shape-shifting as it went. They said Ahmed was chosen by the djinn to save Miraji. He had been brought back from the dead and remade by the very hands of the creatures who had made us. He wasn't wholly human in some eyes. As we passed through towns, people came out of their houses to pray to him, to call out to him, just to see him. And always some joined up with us. Those who could fight or who were able-bodied enough to be trained, Shahzad allowed to come with us. The too old or too young, Ahmed asked to stay behind, not to give their lives for him, promising to fight for them. And then there were the stories that Ahmed was invincible, that he had been resurrected by the hands of the djinn and could not be defeated. I felt my hand drift to Zahir's knife without meaning to, as I started to hear this repeated. By the time we reached Chamat, we were 3 times as many as we'd been when we left the mountains. We weren't just a rabble, we were an army. At midday, we stood on the slope that overlooked the bay of Chamat City. Shahzad's arms were crossed over her chest, surveying the city like she could take it apart brick by brick. Chamat had walls, but we could walk through those easily. We had Delilah if we needed to hide, and we had the twins if we needed a way over the walls. "There's not a chance the Emir hasn't heard we're coming," Shahzad thought out loud, her hair dancing backward in the warm air off the sea as she considered our target. She almost looked like her old self after weeks of walking in fresh air and sun. "There's not a chance they think they can hold against us, either. He hasn't even tried to bar the gates against us."
"No," I agreed, squinting down at the city below. We were almost there, and I felt a sudden burst of impatience as I saw our target. The ships we needed docked just beyond those walls, ready to carry us north. "So how about we just walk in?"
I suppose I expected Shahzad to disagree with me. She didn't.
We walked to the city as if we were invited, not invading. Haitham and Ahmed leading the way, with me and Shahzad close behind, and Jin protecting our backs. The twins kept watch overhead as hummingbirds, zipping back and forth, ready to shift to a more threatening shape if we needed help. Rahim was left with the army just outside the city. Reinforcements if we needed it. No one stopped us at the gates of Chamat, although plenty of people came out to gawk at us. The rebel prince returned from the dead, walking side by side with their rightful emir, who had been taken away months ago. I'd never been in a city like this before,
We march through the tidy, wide, well-paved streets, boxes of flowers and plants overflowing onto colorfully painted walls. The emir's grand house stood at the eastmost point of the city, a great square structure painted pale blue and overlooking the water. So close, in fact, that the sea breeze picked up the white flag that had been raised over its roof, whipping it out for us as we approached. So Hytham's brother had seen us coming. He was surrendering.
If someone surrenders, does that mean you can't kill them?
Hytham asked, squinting up at the flag over his home. He was older than us by a decade or so, though he looked even older from his time at Aramot. Curly hair grew shaggy across his brow. He had been trapped there longer than our people, and he bore marks I was sure would never go away. But there was a new lightness to him now he was back in his city again.
It is traditional not to,
Shazad advised.
But then again, we're big on breaking tradition,
Jin tossed in as we approached the doors of the house. I could sense him close behind me as we climbed up the clean white steps. When I turned back to look at him, his eyes weren't on me, though. They were fixed on the ships in the harbor just below. Jin and Ahmed had spent most of their lives on ships. There was an easiness in Jin's stance I hadn't seen in a long time, now we were so close to the sea. We were wary in spite of the white flag as we entered the house. But there was no ambush inside the door. We ventured in carefully. Marble hallways spread out around us, vacant, and room after room was empty, except for the sea air stirring the curtains. There was no one here for revenge, even if Hytham had wanted it.
He fled,
Hytham declared, pushing open the door to a fine set of rooms. Those that belonged to the emir, I guess. The inside was turned over, as if someone had grabbed their belongings in a rush. His brother.
The coward.
He must have heard that we were on our way. But I had the feeling it wasn't news of our numbers or our weapons that made him flee. It was the news that the rebel prince had returned from the dead. We didn't even have to fight with the tale of Ahmed preceding us. That was the power of a legend. We split up, starting a quick search of the house. Hytham's brother couldn't have got far. Shazad and I took the ground floor, while Hytham went in search of the servants who used to work in his household. If anyone had answers, it would be them. Shazad made a face as she pushed open a door. What? I asked, reaching for my gun already.
No, no.
She stopped me quickly, opening the door fully. It gave way to a small courtyard with a bubbling fountain set into the wall. And above that was a half-finished, multicolored mosaic. It looked like a man's face.
If I ever think it's a good idea to put a 6-foot-high portrait of myself in my home, will you promise to slap me?
I snorted, relaxing my grip on my gun.
You know, it's dangerous for Demji to make promises, I joked.
She was about to say something else when we both heard it. It sounded like a child's cry. It was coming from just beyond the wooden doorway in the small courtyard. The lightness leached out of Shazad's face as quick as anything as she set her hand on her sword. She didn't speak. She didn't need to. We'd fought many a fight together. I knew what she needed. I offered her a slight nod as she moved toward the door, drawing my gun. I took a deep breath as she exhaled. Shazad shoved the door open abruptly, drawing her sword as she did, even as I moved forward, covering her with my gun. And then we both stopped abruptly. Beyond the door was another small garden, crowded with cowering people. I counted about 2 dozen women,
and at least twice as many children, from about 13 years old all the way down to babes in arms. Chazad dropped her blade, even as children in the garden started to cry, and women clutched their children closer to their chests.
"It's all right," she held up her now empty hands. "We're not here to hurt you."
I knew them, I realized. The boy who pressed behind his mother nearby, his name was Bassam. I had seen him once before, standing on the edge of a lake, bow in hand, as he came of age. His father's hand had been on his shoulder. They were the Sultan's wives and children. Layla had said that the rest of the harem had been sent away as the siege approached, sent to safety. Chamat had been safety, at least before we'd arrived.
"We're not going to hurt you,"
Shazad repeated, even as I touched the knife that Zahir had given me, hanging at my side. "Use this knife to take the life of another prince, and I promise you that your prince will live through the battle to take the throne. A prince's life for a prince's life." I thought he meant it as some brutal taunt that I should kill Jin or Rahim when he knew I never would. Some tainted offer of help that I would never get. Except I had hung on to the knife in spite of that, and now I was being presented with dozens of princes. "We're not here to hurt you," Shazad had told them. Suddenly, I couldn't breathe. I pressed out of the garden, ignoring Shazad calling out behind me. Quickly, I laced my way back to the street. I found the road to the sea easily enough, and soon I was standing at the docks, overlooking the ships and the terrifyingly endless water. I ripped the knife out of the sheath at my side and flung it through the air. I had good aim. It arced and landed in the waves, sinking far out of my reach, taking away the chance I might do something stupid and desperate.
"It's no wonder you wanted to rescue him."
I looked up, startled by the voice. There was a man behind me, back against the wall, a small collection of coins by his grubby bare feet.
"You're so afraid of making the wrong choices, aren't you?"
I glanced around, confused, but everyone else at the docks was going about their business without so much as glancing our way. The beggar couldn't be talking to anyone other than me.
"Do you want to know what I think?"
He paused and reached out a hand toward me, like he was begging for a coin. I found a loose, half-loosey piece in my pocket and dropped it into his hands.
"I think you're selfish."
He pocketed the coin quickly.
"All those princes to choose from, who don't mean anything to you, and you can't even kill one of them to save thousands of your own kind when I handed you a way to do it."
That was when he looked at me straight on, and I saw that his eyes were the color of embers. "Zahir!" I recognized him, disguised in this new human shape. "What do you want?"
"I wanted to know what you would do."
He stood, gliding his back up the stone wall behind him.
"But I'm also here to keep my promises," he said.
As he spoke, his body shifted, morphing from the old beggar into a young man who bore an uncanny resemblance to Ahmed.
"You wanted a way to put your prince on the throne, and I promised to give you one, except that you just walked away from it."
Jin had told me once that coincidence didn't have the same cruel sense of humor as fate. The Jin, they had a cruel sense of humor too, and enough power to open a mountain, to turn a boy into a wall of fire, to lead me here across a desert and give me exactly what I'd asked for, a way to keep Ahmed alive. "They're children."
"So are you," he said. Does it really matter whether a life lasts one handful of years, or two, or three?
He was really asking me, I realized. He had been out of the mortal world as long as it had existed. He didn't understand us at all. Didn't understand the difference between being 10 and being 20 and being 100. They were all young to him.
Would it be easier to kill him if he were a man?
He asked.
No, that can't be it, because then you could have killed the other two princes you travel with. But they are men you need, each in his own way.
When he smiled, his face shifted again, this time turning to one that resembled Jin's.
You've killed others before, daughter of Bahadur. Don't deny it.
Killing people to save... I cut myself off as a sly smile spread across the face that looked unsettlingly like Jin's. Killing people in battle is different.
And this is a war. But if you insist, there is another gift I can give you.
He moved quicker than I could see. He didn't step toward me, just disappeared from the air where he stood, reappearing directly before me. I didn't even have time to stagger back before he caught me, holding me tighter than any mortal thing could. It was more like being trapped in the stones of a mountain than being held by arms made of flesh and blood.
This is my new gift to you, daughter of Bahadur.
He kissed me then, before I could pull away. He didn't kiss me like a mortal man either. But his mouth wasn't stone. It was fire. My mouth was scalding under his, and then, just as quickly, it was over. For a moment, as he pulled away, something changed in his face. The certainty shifted to the same bewildered madness I'd seen on his face in the mountain. I remembered something he had said. That I looked like her. The first hero. He had lived with mortality as long as the other Jin, but he had lived out of the world. He had not been blunted by time, nor by the deaths of thousands, the way they had. What was that? I brought my hand to my mouth, but when I touched my lips, they were the same temperature they always were.
A gift. Of life.
His grip didn't feel like warm skin. It felt like air and stone and fire.
You can't keep it for yourself, but you can pass it on to one person, and I promise you that they will live to see old age.
First he'd given me the chance to kill someone, and now he was giving me the chance to save someone with a kiss. To save Ahmed if I wanted to. Or I could save Jin. The selfish thought crept in faster than I could expel it. And then I had another thought. Bilal. If I used it on him, we might be able to take Ilyaz as bloodlessly as we had this city. I could give Bilal his escape from death after all. Chapter 30. I hated the sea. We set sail the next morning, Haitham supplying us with one of the ships from his reclaimed city and a crew to man it. Last time I'd been on a ship, I'd been drugged and a prisoner on the way to the palace. It turned out that not being shackled wasn't much better. The deck of the ship was never steady, and after I lost sight of land, a strange panic set in. Ahmed found me the first night below decks with my head in a bucket. He sat patiently next to me, running a hand gently up and down my spine as I retched up the contents of my stomach. I waited until I was sure I had nothing left before speaking to him, even if I didn't quite dare lift my head from the safety of the bucket. How did you find me? My mouth tasted like bile.
Sam sold you out,
he said,
As I slowly lifted my head, Ahmed handed me a skin of water. I took it with shaky hands and rinsed out my mouth, spitting into the bucket.
He said he hadn't seen you eat anything today.
Should I be flattered he tore his eyes off Shahzad long enough to notice anyone else? I peeled a strand of my still too short hair away from my face.
Here.
He handed me a flat green leaf.
Chew on it. It'll settle your stomach. I got some from the Holy Father in Chamat. I thought we might need it.
It took me a while to find my sea legs, too, back when Jin and I first set off seafaring. Tentatively, I put the thing in my mouth. It didn't taste bad. Sweet and cool as it hit my tongue. I chewed slowly. Ahmed watched as I tried to get my feet under me.
Amani, I need to ask you something.
If Ahmed had more guile, I might have thought he'd deliberately come looking for me when I was shaky and vulnerable. But it was Ahmed.
After this is all over, I'm not going to take the throne.
That got my attention. What?
At least not the way my father took it.
Ahmed hurried on before I could start berating him.
Not by force, without giving the people a choice in who governs them. You were right about what you said in Sazi. I ought to listen to the people who know this desert. I'm going to hold a vote, like they do in the Ionian Republics, to let the people choose their ruler. Any man or woman who thinks they would make a better ruler than me can put their name forward, and if the people agree they would be better than me, they can choose that person instead.
I stared back at him, trying to take this all in. Why are you telling me this?
Because.
Ahmed rubbed at the scar on his forehead thoughtfully. It was a habit of his when he was thinking.
I want to know what you think.
Why?
I realized I was speaking mostly in single words. I didn't sound smart enough to lace up my own boots, let alone advise a ruler on this.
But I had told him back in Sazi that he didn't know everything, that he ought to listen to me.
Amani, you know this country better than anyone else in this rebellion. Do you think it will work?
I thought about it. What would you do about the Sultim trials? They've been used to determine the next ruler since the beginning. It's a hard tradition to break.
I know that. But do you think I can?
The Sultan had said something to me the night of Aurangzeb, with his firstborn's blood still on his hands. He'd said that the world was changing, that the time of immortals and magic was ending, that they should not be allowed to rule our lives anymore. We should rule theirs. The Sultan was a cruel, self-serving man, but I didn't know that he was wrong when he said that. Maybe it was time to change. Maybe the desert was ready to choose its own ruler. Yes. I nodded slowly, my head still swimming a little. I think it might work. Ahmed's shoulders sagged in relief, and I realized he'd been nervous about what I would say. He pressed his knuckle into the spot on his forehead. I reached up to his hairline, moving one of the dark curls away from the spot he'd been worrying at. Where did you get that? I asked before I could stop myself. I knew most of the scars on Jin's body. Ahmed didn't have quite so many, but he had some.
Oh.
Ahmed laughed.
It was my fault. It was when Jin and I were very young. Our first year on board the Black Seagull.
I was learning to plot courses while Jin spent most of his time clambering up and down the rigging. I made a mistake one day. We sailed into a storm that we should have been able to avoid. I could have shipwrecked us. As it was, I was lucky. I just split my head open on the deck when we nearly capsized. I thought I was going to die that day.
"Are you afraid?" I asked, dropping my hand. "Of dying?" I felt the memory of Zaheer's kiss tingling on my lips.
"I don't know,"
he considered. If anyone had asked me the same question, my answer would have been quick and certain. Yes, terrified. Did that make me selfish and cowardly?
"I've seen a lot of the world, a lot of what people believe about death, and I don't entirely know what I believe waits for us after. But I do fear things in this life. Not dying, but losing. That I'll have been the one to lead us into the monster's mouth, promising it was a cave of riches. That others will die, and that those who have already died for me will have done so for nothing. That everything that has happened and everything I have done will have become entirely insignificant and forgotten."
But then we were all more selfish than Ahmed. That was why he led us. And he was right. We weren't in this for ourselves, for this life. We were in it for what we could make for the future. The rest of us could die for this, but Ahmed needed to live. If I used Zaheer's kiss for Bilal, Ahmed might still fall at the 11th hour. He might die leading us to victory. But I was frightened that if I didn't use Zaheer's kiss for Bilal, I'd be far too tempted to give it to Jin instead. Because I would always be more selfish than Ahmed. It took us 3 days of sailing to reach the northern edge of Miraji, and another 2 before we were close to port again. As we sailed toward Gasab, we passed near enough to the coast that the shadow of the middle mountains fell over the ship. Everyone came on deck to watch as we sailed by, crossing the frontier from eastern Miraji to west, a long way from where we'd crossed over the other way. We were close. So close to getting Rahim to his army, to snatching them away from Bilal and marching them on Isman. I'd only been to the port city of Gasab once. Twice, if you counted the time I was dragged through it unconscious by my aunt. But I hadn't exactly gotten to see much of it then. Ahmed sent the twins out ahead to report back the day before we would dock. It might be a few days to Ilyaz on foot, but it was only a few short hours as the shape-shifting falcons flew. They were back before sundown. Maz landed on the crow's nest and scrambled down the mast in the shape of a monkey, while Iz misjudged his landing and catapulted into a roll that only didn't break his neck because he became a snake at the last second before turning into a very naked boy at our feet. Iz reached us first. "There's an army," he said breathlessly, yet with a wide-eyed look that couldn't quite hide his exhilaration at beating Maz to us. "Were you two racing?" Shahzad asked, tossing Iz a shirt, which he tied around his middle for our sake. Iz beamed momentarily. "I won."
"I can see that,"
Shahzad said, handing a pair of trousers to a disgruntled-looking Maz, as he reached the bottom of the mast and changed back to a boy. "What's this about an army?"
"Ilyaz," Maz said, fastening his trousers. "There's an army camped at the western base of the mountains, by the look of it."
"There are blue flags," Iz added.
"The Gallen," I said, feeling my blood go cold.
"What are they doing here?"
I found my seasickness was better if I stayed on deck, where the air was less stale.
and the plants Ahmed had given me had helped some. I'd taken to sleeping on the deck, falling asleep under the stars. Jin was usually there at night, too, manning this monstrous ship I didn't understand or like, with the whole of his attention. I'd been avoiding him ever since Zaheer had kissed me, since any temptation to kiss him would be a decision bigger than I was ready to make right now.
Probably running a supply route to Isman through the mountains.
Rahim crossed his arms over his chest, leaning back against one of the huge masts.
It's what I would do if I were laying siege to the city. You'd think they'd have the decency to stay out of our country while we fight this out among ourselves.
How many? Shahzad asked, growing grave now. She checked around quickly, making sure no one else on board was close enough to hear. Iz and Maz traded sheepish looks. Iz scratched his blue hair, making it stick up at the back as he faced us.
A lot?
He guessed.
I'd say at least twice that many.
Maz nodded along seriously.
So too many to fight outright.
Jin interpreted for the rest of us. Any way we can walk through under an illusion? Shahzad turned to our Demji princess. I don't think I can hide this many people. Delilah chewed her lip as she glanced around. 6 people is one thing, but we're close to 300 now. The wind off the water picked up, riffling its fingers through all of our hair, dashing a few stray strands over our general's face, deep in thought.
We could fly over them.
Ahmed was pressing that spot on his hairline again.
Only in small numbers, though,
Jin pointed out, leaning on the helm as we moved gently through the water. I stared out across the narrow band of sparkling blue ocean. We had finished passing the mountain now. The coast wasn't green fields and orchards of sweet fruits anymore. It was blistering golden sand. It was a desert. My desert.
It would take too long.
Rahim agreed for once.
And it's a risk to split everyone up.
Rahim, you know these mountains. Is there a way around? Shahzad asked. I found myself reaching for the sand, almost without noticing it. The pain in my ribs answered, but so did the desert, shifting as I drummed my fingers against my side. I had the beginning of an idea. I just couldn't tell whether it was the kind that would get us all killed or not.
The mountain is well defended,
Rahim was saying.
No roads, only paths. There is one way we could try, but we'd lose at least a week and—
What if we go through? I interrupted Rahim. Not around, not over, but— I made a small forward motion with my hand, like it was a knife cutting through silk, and even this far away I felt the sand shift, like a current through water. Through! The wheels in my mind were still turning, wondering if we could really do this, or if I was losing my mind.
No.
Ahmed was already shaking his head.
You heard, Shahzad. A fair fight would be suicide with our numbers, and I won't risk it.
But Shahzad knew me well enough to know that even I wasn't reckless enough to suggest fighting our way through. She was watching me, mind turning quickly, trying to see what I was thinking. You're not talking about a fight, are you? Not a fair one, at least. I could feel the excitement bubbling up. What if we sailed through? There was a moment of complete silence as everyone stared at me like I was insane. Everyone except Shahzad, who understood instantly. Jin caught up to her a moment later.
So, just to be clear.
Jin leaned forward so that I was pinned under his gaze. He was speaking slowly. If I knew him any less well, I might have thought he was chastising me. But I did know him. He had that smile on his face, like we were about to get ourselves in real trouble, and he wouldn't have it any other way.
You're suggesting sailing a ship through the sand with your Demji gift?
You really think that will work? Shazad asked. The sand runs deep enough, I said. I could feel the rush of being back in the desert. I think I can try.
You know a ship isn't flat, don't you?
Jin said, but that spark was still there.
You'll have to keep it balanced. Without the full force of your powers?
Ahmed asked.
Amani, it's a risk.
They didn't trust me. Not entirely. I could see the doubt hanging on every single one of their faces as they looked at me. That I wasn't strong enough. They thought I was too confident. But if my power was draining out of me and my days were numbered, then I might as well use the dregs of it to do something big. I might as well pour it all out of me before I died. Everything we do is a risk, I said. And we've got a bigger fight than this one waiting for us in Isman. I don't want to lose any more time.
You're sure you're up to this, Bandit?
Jin tightened his hands on the wheel. I raised my shoulder. What's the worst that could happen?
We could all die,
Rahim answered. So what else is new? I asked. I watched the circle of people around me as the idea that we might actually do this settled on us one by one. What it might mean, that it might even be possible.
It'd be one hell of a battering ram, Shazad admitted.
If Amani can do this, Rahim started. She can,
Jin said, eyes on me. He was on my side, along with Shazad. We only needed one more person. Everyone looked at Ahmed. He was unreadable, a family trait he shared with his father. His head tilted forward in thought for a long moment. I was about to say something else, to keep fighting for it, keep making a case that I could do this, when he lifted his head. And the rebel prince had slipped away. He didn't look like his father, I realized. He finally looked like a sultan. And he nodded. Chapter 31. The sun rose bright and brilliant to the east side of the ship, the wind coming from the north tugging at the sails.
It's good weather for sailing.
Jin tied a rope around my waist. He was so close, the sun blazing behind him, making me squint when I looked up at him. Everyone was tied to the ship, harnessed so that if I lost control of the sand and the ship toppled over, they wouldn't be thrown overboard. Jin fastened the rope tighter. We waited until the first light crested over the edge of the water before Ahmed nodded to us from where he was harnessed to the mast. Jin started calling orders like we'd planned, instructions I didn't understand about sails and jibs. We started to move, the sails swelling, waves lapping against the hull below us, as Jin maneuvered us straight toward the shore. I took a deep breath and felt the sand on the floor of the sea swell lazily in response, trying to fight the heavy water clinging to it. I shut my eyes, pressing my palm downward, pouring my focus into it as we picked up speed on the water. I felt the sand strain against me, even as the pain in my side doubled, almost toppling me over the side as I fought to cling to my power.
Now, Jin called.
I pulled on my powers at the same moment that the sailors pulled on knots. Sails billowed to their full swell out into the wind, and the sand rose up to meet us, lashing into the bottom of the ship. The whole thing rocked unsteadily under us, listing to the left. A few screams rang out across the deck, and I gripped the ship,
fighting to regain my balance and balance the ship at the same time, letting the sand drop out from below us for a moment, letting the water take back over, even as the desert rose ahead to meet us. We were running the ship aground, except I was hoping I'd be able to keep it running.
Amani, now!
I heard Jin's voice again.